Former NORAD officer Stanley Fulham predicted that in January, this month, that there will be UFOs over Moscow and London. And he correctly predicted UFOs on 10/13/2010. So this next prediction is certainly interesting. And Stanley Fulham just died on December 19th. Here's an article from Examiner.com. Alfred Lambremont Weber, Seattle Exopolitics Examiner, from December 23rd, 2010. Stanley Fulham dies. Warned ETs will intervene and save Earth's collapsing ecology. Former NORAD officer Stanley A. Fulham, author of the landmark book Challenges of Change, passed away on Sunday, December 19, 2010, at Riverview Health Center in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Stanley Arthur Fulham, April 16, 1923 to December 19, 2010. Please click here to read Mr. Fulham's obituary. Mr. Fulham's family publicly released the news of his passing on December 23, 2010. In honor of Mr. Fulham's unique service to humanity, we reprint our Examiner.com article about Mr. Fulham's work, including a historic 90-minute Exopolitics radio interview with Alfred Lambremont Weber, broadcast less than 2 months before he passed away. Here's the article, ET Council, we will increase UFOs. Address UN in 2014, renew ecology in 2015. October 23rd, 2010, an exclusive in-depth interview on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Lambremont Weber, former NORAD officer Stanley A. Fulham, has stated that a regional galactic governance authority, the Council of Eight, made a dramatic decision in January 2010 to put aside the law of non-intervention. At a solemn meeting, the Council of Eight decided to intervene with their technology to clean Earth's atmosphere before an environmental collapse occurs on Earth, as has happened on many other inhabited planets with civilizations similar to our own. The Council of Eight did so, according to Mr. Fulham's information, after researching a conclusion that our human technology could not now prevent an environmental collapse and species extinction on Earth from occurring. According to Mr. Fulham, this is a rare decision by the Council of Eight, and it is partly a result of Council members wishing to preserve the unique positive qualities of our human population. The Council of Eight, according to Mr. Fulham's information, consists of the intelligent civilizations of the Pleiades, Orion, Sirius, Bootes, Alpha Centauri, Komsuli, Zeta Reticuli, and Palseti. This cleanup of the Earth's atmosphere will, according to Mr. Fulham's information, commence in 2015 after a 2014 speech at the United Nations by the Council of Eight's Pleiadian representatives. The Council of Eight's appearance in 2014 at the United Nations General Assembly may occur, according to Mr. Fulham's information, following a collapse of the present world order and the emergence of a new way of living during the period 2010 to 2014. This transitional 2010 to 14 period may be accompanied by possible Earth changes, monetary collapse, and governmental and nation-state collapse. Mr. Fulham stated in his Exopolitics radio interview that the Regional Galactic Governance Council, Council of Eight, had chosen New York City for an initial October 13, 2010 UFO decloaking because it was a global cosmopolitan city with a blasé population that would not be frightened of their appearance. There are multiple independent evidentiary sources that prove the October 13, 2010 UFO sightings over New York City were the result of an intervention by a non-earthly intelligent civilization and not the result of other causes such as released balloons. The original plan of the Council of Eight, taken at a meeting in January 2010, had been for simultaneous UFO appearances on October 13, 2010 over major world cities. The purpose of these Council of Eight UFO appearances, which are set to increase in the future, is to acclimatize Earth humans to the Council of Eight's presence and decision to intervene. The increased UFO sightings in the future are meant to lead up to a world speech by the Pleiadian representatives of the Council of Eight in the General Assembly Hall at the United Nations in 2014. Examiner.com readers can listen to this in-depth historic interview with Stanley A. Fulham in the Examiner.com article below. The Council of Eight. According to Mr. Fulham, the Council of Eight has had a caretaker role for our planet for about the last 1,000,000 years and has effectively maintained Earth under protective quarantine following an attempted invasion and takeover of Earth. Mr. Fulham has authored a book, Challenges of Change, containing the results of his 10-year investigation of the role of the Council of Eight and other entities in our galaxy and universes. Mr. Fulham writes that he obtained this information about the Council of Eight through an interdimensional intelligent civilization that monitors events in our galaxy and universes. Other experts, such as Dr. Carl Johann Kalman, have independently predicted in interviews with Alfred Lambermont Weber an end to hierarchies and the value of money, and increased extraterrestrial and UFO contact in the 2010-14 period. On October 14, 2010, a day after the New York City UFO sightings, Dr. Maslan Othman, director of the UN Outer Space Office, delivered a wide-ranging 28-minute video press conference at the United Nations in New York, during which she stated that ET life is a possibility and remarked that the United Nations must ready itself for ET contact. Examiner.com readers can view Dr. Othman's press conference here. There are a number of anomalies on the material presented by the Interdimensional Transcender Group to Stanley A. Fulham. For example, a preliminary search failed to reveal a known star system or constellation named Komsuli or Pausetti. Reported home bases for two of the intelligent civilizations the Transcenders claim to be members of the Council of Eight. Moreover, according to Mr. Fulham's book, page 75, the Transcenders state that there is not an indigenous intelligent civilization on Mars. Rather, that the intelligent civilization on Mars is actually a Council of Eight member, Alpha Centauri, that uses Mars as a base in our solar system. This reporter, Alfred Lambermont Weber, has published studies that employ the law of evidence and demonstrate that independent whistleblower evidence from former DARPA Project Pegasus participant Andrew D. Basaggio and documentary evidence from NASA rover Spirit photographs prove the existence, more probably than not, of an indigenous intelligent civilization on Mars. Experts in the field of extraterrestrial contactees have commented that interdimensional ET contactees such as Mr. Fulham are often intentionally given disinformation on certain factual details such as the existence of life on Mars so as to protect them from attack by U.S. military intelligence forces on Earth that seek to hide these details. The possibility exists that Mr. Fulham may have been given disinformation of this sort by the Transcenders around the existence of indigenous intelligent life on Mars. Historic 90-minute interview with Stanley A. Fulham on the Council of Eight, ET Contact, and ET Environmental Intervention. Examiner.com readers can listen to this historic 90-minute interview with Stanley A. Fulham and Alfred Lambermont Weber on the Council of Eight, ET Contact, and ET Environmental Intervention in 2015 by clicking here or below. Okay. I'm going to play some clips of this interview because I think it's excellent and it's extremely interesting. And so here we go.
Just to begin to ease into the in-depth story here, you've actually been in I just want to use the term dimensional communication because you use a dimensional go-between to communicate with a group of representatives of a group of interdimensional beings who in turn have related to you the activities of what I would call a regional galactic governance body called the Council of Eight. Is that sort of a fair
yes.
A fair characterization?
Yes.
Now, how was it that you came about to be in this set of circumstances, just from the human point of view?
Well, Alfred, I left the Air Force. I retired from the Air Force. And so did my friend Dave. He was in the intelligence work there. And when we retired, we were left with the same questions we had when we joined the Air Force. Who were they? Where were they from? Are they a threat? What about the abductions? All of these questions we had, and we had no answer, but it bothered me, and I really wanted to know. So I never talked to the aliens, so I had no contact with them. I read every book on UFOs that you could ever, that I think was ever published. There were no answers. There was this sighting and there was that sighting, but there's nobody could come out right and tell us, well, this is where they're from, this is what they're doing here, and this type of thing. So it was a very frustrating time for me. So I was talking to a very spiritual friend of mine, and I said to her, you know, one of the things that really confused me, and not only me, all the officers and NORAD, and the fighter pilots as well, who had experience with UFOs, is that, like on my radar, sometimes you're tracking a UFO, it would appear, disappear, appear, disappear, suddenly. And also I talked to a fighter pilot who was chasing a UFO over the mountains in British Columbia there, and he said the UFO disappeared into the side of a mountain at terrific speed, probably well over 2,000 miles an hour. There was no crash, no explosion. And then he says, a moment later, it appeared through the top of the mountain, hovered for a moment, and then flew away, completely unscathed. I talked to a commercial airlines pilot who was flying from Europe to the United States, and he told me of a similar incident where he saw this UFO dive into the sea, no crash, nothing else, and a few miles further, it reappeared, hovered around his aircraft for a while, then flew away. And that is what I found very intriguing, because that obviously was in total violation of all our third-dimensional physical laws. So obviously they were not from our dimension. So I explained this to my spiritual friend, and I said, so, you know, there's no way of me getting this information because I can't contact them, I can't talk to them. You know, how will we ever find out about this, you know, this reality? And she says, well, you can. She says, you can go to the spiritual world. The spiritual world knows all of these things because they have the Akashic records. They can see. And the other thing is, at the subconscious level, the soul is non-separate from all other souls in the universe. Now, that's a concept which is very difficult for anybody to understand or to accept. In fact, it's beyond our comprehension. I'm not going to belabor that, but I'm telling you what information I got. And so she suggested to me that I can talk to a group known as the Transcender Group, which is a group of 43,000 very old souls who have lived on different planets, lived in the spiritual systems here, realms here and there, have a vast wealth of experience and knowledge, and they group together to provide advice and assistance for those of us who are on that rugged trail back to the Creator. It's not an easy ride. It's a pretty rough life, as many of your listeners, I'm sure, would agree. So, and she said, you can contact them through a channeler. And she recommended that I do so through Rick Thurston, who is a very reputable person here in Canada. Well, I was born and raised in the Catholic Church, and I attended the Catholic University and this sort of thing, so that sort of went against my background quite a bit, but I was so desperate for information that I finally contacted Rick, and I talked to the Transcenders for the first time for about half an hour, and I tell you, I was in a complete state of shock because I realized there was nothing about me, about my past, that they didn't know, and even some of the things about my future. And so I sort of sat back for a while, but a few months later I went back, and then I carried on a dialogue with them for about the past 11, 12 years, talking to them almost regularly every month, one thing or another. And I found out it doesn't matter. Whatever question I have for them, I can ask them about the string theory. I can ask them about some of the most sophisticated medical research being done. I can ask them about politics. It doesn't matter. All of that is visible to them. because all of the minds, your mind, my mind, all our listeners, at the subconscious level is non-separate. So they know what is known and thought throughout the universe. And that is where I got my information from. My book is not my book. My book is the information I got from the transcenders.
According to the information presented by the transcenders, the Council of Eight first came together about a million years ago when there was an attempted takeover of our planet by, quote, the reptilian faction, I guess, within the galaxy or this universe, which is about 300 billion strong, it says, and that the reptilians' motivation is to make farms of human planets. And then 2,000 years ago, with the incarnation, around the incarnation of Jesus of Nazareth, that was the last time that there was sort of some kind of armed conflict where the Council of Eight resumed, you know, there was again an attempted reptilian incursion. I wondered if you could go into in depth on that issue, because I know that people are really concerned about the reptilian issue at some level and are very confused about it.
Yeah. Well, what it indicates, you know, what you just said, is that the world, the universe rather, is mysterious beyond our wildest imaginations. We just have no concept. And I taught the transcenders about it, and I asked them about today, and they told me, in fact, one of my books I'm publishing next year is called Strange Aliens. It is a very, very strange universe, because when God created the universes, and he gave us free will and choice, and things would develop in the billions and billions of different ways. You know, there's not another Alfred Weber or Stan Fulham in the universe, and there are zillions upon zillions of souls. And so there are, and there's no, nobody, God doesn't let us sit in moral judgment of any of his creation. We do, mind you, but God doesn't. So we have all of these different creatures developing according to a large extent, according to the planetary energies that exist, on which they exist. So they develop in a different way. Now, the reptilian empire, known as reptilian empire, developed the way they did. Now, they their main food is other beings. And other, but mind you, you know, Alfred, so it's not entirely strange when you find is that some of the more advanced civilized societies, planetary societies, when they come to Earth and they study us, for the unseen, mind you, they're in the fourth dimension, they study us for a while and they think we're not much better than animals. They see us killing animals, eating animals. They see killing ourselves. They see all these diseases and they think we're not much better than animals. You see, this thing is that it's all comparative, and so there's some pretty bad characters out there. There's another one called the Force of Evil, and they try to invade our galaxy. Oh, that's a long time ago. And again, is that, well, in fact, that's the time when the Council was formed, in order to protect our galaxy against this four vast, powerful force of evil. I'm getting more information about that, and I'll include it in my book, Dealing with Strange Aliens. But, yes, there are a lot of strange things out there, Alfred, a lot of strange things, beyond our belief, beyond our understanding. And if we weren't protected, we would have disappeared a long time ago.
Well, does that mean that the Council of Eight, I'm just trying to read, have placed us in a kind of a quarantine or kind of cordoned us off so that we're protected because we're not able to fend for ourselves? Is that
yes? Now that raises a question. Alfred, I'm glad you brought that up because I've been asked about this on a number of occasions. I had written in my book, as you know, because you read the book, that the transcenders told me there are countless thousands of planetary societies just like ours who have polluted their environment to complete extinction. Not a single being, not an animal, not a plant survived. And the Pleiadians and others, you know, in the Indian Council, find it rather sad when they, in their space travel, and they see sometimes this planet out there. All it is just a black planet, nothing on it, no life, no trees, no beings, just circling around their sun, and at one time was a flourishing planetary society. And this has happened in countless thousands of cases, which raised my question. And getting back, you know, to the sightings we had over New York.
Right.
And what they're planning to do in the future in this
region. Right.
It's all because they decided about a year ago that our environmental crisis is getting to be so bad, they will have to intervene. They have no choice, otherwise we will not exist. And they're planning to do so by 2015, but they don't want to do so just suddenly, because their intervention will create massive fear and panic and hysteria. So there's a purpose in what they are trying to achieve, and that's how they're going to do it. Now, getting back to this is that, so they decided they were going to do so about a year ago. And that is a major, major decision.
Yeah.
The transcenders said.
Yeah, Stan, could I just jump in here?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to break your train of thought, but I just want to bring this up so our listeners understand. I'm reading here from page 207 of your book. It says, the Alien Council has considered the Earth's environmental crisis and determined not to interfere at this time. In other words, there's the law of non-interference, so that here it appears as though the council has set aside the situation is so serious, and we are so fortunate that the council has set aside the law of non-interference. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's astounding.
Yes, it is.
Well, why is it that we are so fortunate that they've set aside the law of non-interference?
Very good question. I've been asked that many times. And I asked the transgenders that. I says, you know, here they were. They know, they monitor everything in our galaxy and out in the universe. They could see some of the planetary societies polluting their environment to total extinction. They did nothing. They didn't intervene. And yet in this case, on Earth, they decided they were going to save us. Isn't that a major, major change and their thinking and their attitude towards other alien societies? And the transgender said, yes. So I wanted to know the reasons why. And they said, for one thing, the Earth is unique in the universe. The emotional energies you have on Earth is unique. There is no other planet in the universe that has as much emotional energies as you have. That is the reason why, for example, the aliens are fascinated with the Earth. For example, during the last Winter Olympic Games in Vancouver, there were over 300 billion aliens who were watching the Winter Games. Why is it? Well, they watched our sports like hockey and football, this sort of thing, and they watched these people down there, the humans, yelling and screaming and crying and hooting and hollering and this sort of thing. They don't understand it because they don't have that kind of emotional energies, but they are fascinated by it. And that is the reason why they also monitor a lot of our communications and movies. And the Alpha Centaurians, for example, who are a very tough bunch of beings, they love our old Western movies. They know all about Tom Mix and Roy Rogers and all that sort of thing. They just love that kind of thing. So we are important in that aspect, is that we are unique. How come? Why are we unique? I'm not quite clear, but I'm going to get that clear with transgenders. I'm not quite clear of that. Although somebody said, well, yes, because we're God's special creation. Well, I don't know about that, but maybe. Anyway, and the other thing is that there was hope for us because they monitor us. They know us far better than we do. And so, especially the Pleiadians, who monitor us very, very closely and helped us over the past million of years, and they saw that there was hope for our spiritual development. Now, mind you, there are no religions amongst them. But let's not get confused with this now, because like someone mystic once said, is that there are no atheists in the universe. They only exist on Earth. How about a true statement? Because they are very spiritual, but in a different way, because their understanding of the universe and of God and God's creation is so vastly beyond ours, is that they don't need the religious rituals and all this sort of thing for their relationship to God. So that is very important. And they saw hope in us. They saw that big spiritual change which is taking place. In fact, it's taking place now, according to the Mayan prophecies. And within the next 10 years, you will hardly recognize our world. Certainly you'll have a hard time recognizing our religions. So there's those two basic reasons, Alfred.
Yeah. May I just ask, is there any factor that Jesus of Nazareth incarnated here?
Is there any what?
As part of the mix.
Yeah.
Is part of the mix that we had 2,000 years ago an incarnation like Jesus of Nazareth, in other words, a creator son or not?
Christ was no accident.
Yeah, that could it be that one of the reasons why the law of non-interference has been set aside was that we had an incarnation 2,000 years ago of a creator son on this planet.
Yeah. I was thinking more of Free One Church in terms of doing things evil and this sort of thing. But Christ is, when he stood before Pilate, I asked the transcenders about that. Well, first of all, I said, did Christ really live on earth? And they said, yes. I said, did he walk on water? Yes. Did he cure the sick and dying? Yes. And the transcendent said, and he took 2 loaves of bread and 5 fish, and he fed a multitude of 5,000 people. And then I said, and he was crucified? Yes. And he walked out of the tomb? Yes. So, this is a very unusual being, a being who can transcend the physical reality in which he lived. And, of course, that is true. But the thing is, of course, his message is not really in the Bible. I'm sorry to say this, Alfred, because what Christ wrote has in large extent been destroyed, but there's still some of it around, and it'll make its appearance within the next, I would say, about the next 4 or 5 years. But anyway, the thing is that Christ, when he stood before Pilate, and I asked the transgenders about that, so he stood before Pilate, and Pilate said, are you the king? Are you the son of God? And Christ said, yes. Unfortunately, he didn't say anymore. He should have explained it a little bit better. Because, Alfred, if you were there, the transcenders would say to you, or to, as they said to me, if you were standing before Pilate, and Pilate said to you, well, Alfred Weber, are you the son of God? And you would have to say yes, because we are all created by God. We all come from God. Our soul does, not our physical bodies. Let's not get confused with that. But there are some souls, like the transcenders, for example, are vastly beyond, in experience and knowledge and spiritualism, vastly, and their concept of spiritual vastly beyond ours. But there are souls, like Christ, who are, great spirits. Oh, I there's no way of describing it. And his function in his existence, he goes around to different planetary systems, and he teaches what he taught. Basically, you are your brother's keeper. And so that is, he's not coming back in body, of course, but his Christ consciousness is returning to Earth within the next 10 to 20 years. And it'll start off in Russia, as I think I wrote in my book, and it'll expand from there throughout the world.
Which is very interesting, because many, there that information has come dimensionally through other channels, such as Edgar Cayce, that says that
yes.
Russia will be the first source of Christ consciousness.
Yes, that's right.
Also, now, Stan, so we now have properly set the stage, I believe, and we're up to a very dramatic moment, and that moment is October 13th, 2010, at which you, I believe, were a very courageous individual to have published your book, to have published in your book, and to have taken a stand with that public date. And I wondered if you could share with us the process that you went through in publishing those dates, where there have been other individuals who have published those dates in the past, and things haven't occurred, and there's been a lot of disappointment and things like that.
Yes, Alfred, predictions are very difficult to make because of the one basic element involved, which is, the fundamentals of free will and choice. Now, all the aliens have free, all the souls throughout the universe have free will and choice. This is not unique to us. So the Pleiadians, who were sort of masterminding this UFO display, they considered all the factors involved because they know us better. They know us far better than we know ourselves and the conditions on Earth. And they, once the Asian consul decided that they were going to intervene to save us from our environmental crisis, they decided, well, they simply cannot come down en masse and create massive panic and fear and hysteria. They would do so gradually. And so about a year ago, just before my book went to print, about, I think we were on January, February, but just before that, the transgenders told me, I was discussing this situation with them, and they said the Asian consul had decided then that they would intervene. I said, whoa, what a massive, what a great decision, one of the greatest decisions in the drama of the universe. And that was fine. And then they were going to do so with this UFO display over our principal cities. That was the intent. Now, about 3 weeks ago, that didn't happen, by the way. They appeared in New York. About 3 weeks ago, when I was talking to transgender, they said that especially the Pleiadians, because these were Pleiadian spacecraft, and the Pleiadians determined, no, that we weren't quite ready for that, and that we'd create too much fear and panic and hysteria if they did that over all our principal cities, and they would just focus in on one major city for now. And the process has started. It won't stop, but they would start, and they picked New York because it's an international city, cosmopolitan, and the people there are quite blasé, and so it'd be easier for them to accept UFOs up in their sky. And so this is what they decided to do, and this is what they did. It wasn't balloons or any of that damn nonsense. But anyway, the thing is, they did that. Now, so some people have then challenged me and said, well, where's all, you know, they were supposed to be over all these principal cities, and that didn't occur, and I explained to them just what I've said. But I said the process has started. Now, they will appear over other cities in the near future. I will give that date sometimes, maybe in December, and I'm sticking my neck out again. And I know when I wrote that about October 13th, I know several of my friends and thought, oh, you're being foolish. That's a ridiculous thing to do because predictions seldom turn out. And if it doesn't work out on October 13th, then your credibility is destroyed and your book is destroyed. And I said, yeah, I'm aware of that. But I have so much faith in the transgenders and what they were telling me that I decided I would risk that. And so maybe in December, I will publish through our website the potential dates for the next sightings, and then the transgenders tell me that will then accelerate, and then there'll be more sightings over the continents, and then it'll become almost sight appearances on a daily basis. So that's what that situation is there. Now, mind you, also, Alfred, I want to explain this. There are quite a number of people said, yeah, but there are many other sightings as well over San Francisco, San Diego, many other places. I said, yes, And also over China, there were some rather some very strange things happening over China, such as some people correlate the sighting of a UFO with the disappearance of a village in the Kunming province of China. Have you read about that, Alfred?
Yes. Yes,
now,
I have.
That's a very, very strange situation.
Mm.
I have the information about that, and I can't divulge that right now. Did it happen? Yes. And I will write about that, and I'll post it on my website in the near future.
Excellent. Now, what is all this leading up to?
It's leading up to not only the Pleiadians, but I think to a large extent the Pleiadians. In the year 2015, well, one of the things they will plan to do, of course, appear before the United Nations in 2014, in about 4 years' time.
Now, is that over the UN or in
no,
the UN?
They will appear at the UN.
You mean in? They will actually.
They will address the United Nations.
The Pleiadians will address.
Yes.
The United Nations.
And one of the reasons why, of course, they picked the Pleiadians as their spokesperson, so to speak, because the Pleiadians look more like us. They're about 8 to 10 feet tall. They're blonde, blue-eyed people, very fine features, and of course, a great many Pleiadians, as well as, well, practically all the Alpha Centaurians and many others speak English. They have no difficulty in learning language. They also speak Russian and Chinese and French and German and so forth. They have no trouble, but they monitor all our communications, which most of it is in English. So they're very fluent.
Now, Stan, as a former NORAD officer, how are they going to get their ships to even land at the UN without NORAD scrambling jets?
Alfred, NORAD has known about UFOs for going all the way back from the day it was formed. You know, my experience, I told you about scrambling the two jets after UFOs on the West Coast here about 50 years ago. There was nothing unique about that. There were hundreds of cases like that. That happens all the time, except NORAD doesn't publish the information. They don't publish that at all, so people are not aware. But these incidents are happening all the time. And the one thing they do know, that these aliens, spacecraft, have never taken offensive action against our fighter jets.
Okay, so what are the set of circumstances under which the Pleiadian representatives and ambassadors would speak at the UN in 2014? We're now in 2010.
Yep.
The changes between now and then would be so wonderful and so magnificent. What do you envision those changes to be?
Well, see, that's just that I don't see, according to transgenders, they don't see anything wonderful and changes taking place in the next 2 years. It's very much like the Mayan prophecy predicted.
Oh.
Yes, because, you see, there's Earth change. Environmental crisis is one thing. That's pollution of our atmosphere.
Yeah.
Now, Earth changes is earthquakes, tsunamis, tornadoes, all that sort of thing. It's starting. It'll probably even start this winter with massive Earth changes in Asia. And you remember what Edgar Cayce said about Japan? It eventually would disappear.
Yeah.
And look, and also eastern China, east coast of China will be devastated. And so many other lands out there will be seriously affected. And so it starts then. It'll start maybe this winter. And it gradually gets worse, but 2012 is the worst year of all. So there are not good years at all, Alfred. I'm sorry, but according to the transgenders, those are grim, grim years ahead of us.
So that what you're saying is that by 2014, all of this duress may have transformed humanity to the extent where there would not be resistance to the Pleiadians appearing at the United Nations. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. No, by that time, the world will have been accustomed to seeing them. There will be some interaction and communication with them and this sort of thing. So, no, we'll be ready for them in 2014. Because by 2015, the transgenders told me is that they must appear in our atmosphere. If they're going to clean up our atmosphere, they're going to be in our third dimension. So you may have 200-300 spacecraft up there in our atmosphere, cleaning up our atmosphere, and they will be seen, but at least we'll know what they're doing. But now, it may take them as long as 12 to 15 months in order to clean up our atmosphere.
Now, Stan, we have only a couple of minutes left in this segment. Would you be willing to stay over some extra time?
When?
Now.
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. Let me just take a quick break. We'll take just a quick break, and we'll be back momentarily with Stan Fulham, a former NORAD officer and author of Challenges of Change. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Alfred Lambermont Weber, and we're rejoining a very challenging discussion with author Stanley A. Fulham, a former NORAD officer and author of Challenges of Change. Welcome back, Stan.
Yes, Alfred.
Well, we have just gotten to the present moment, and we're looking at the scenario between 2010, October 13th, was sort of when humanity got to see, I guess, what they call the handwriting on the wall in terms of predicted UFO sightings over New York City, predicted by yourself. And that's important because you predicted them along with a 350-page book that is filled with wisdom and information from an interdimensional group that brings information from a regional galactic governance authority to this planet. So this is quite a planetary update that we're getting. But the point where we were in our last segment is that it appears that we're now in 2010, and what the Council of Eight has said, and the transcenders have said is that in the year 2014, the representatives for the Council of Eight, which is a regional galactic governance authority representing eight major star systems within the galaxy, would be addressed physically by the Pleiadians to announce their program of cleaning up our environmental, our atmosphere and environmental pollution so our planet does not go into environmental collapse. Is that sort of a fair summary? Or?
Yes.
Now, there are so many questions that come from this, Stan. I mean, you know, there's a thing of clearing up the symptoms, but if we merely go in and clear up the garbage, if the Pleiadians just go in and clear up the garbage and they don't tell humanity how to transform their permanent war economy and their exploitative, non-sustainable lifestyle and economy, isn't the atmosphere just going to become polluted again?
Well, exactly. That is the reason why there's going to be, and there will be, a massive change in our economic and, well, in our economic concepts and our governmental setups, one thing or another, within the next several years. Within the next 4 or 5 years, there'll be massive changes. There's going to be, because we simply cannot go on the way we are, every man for himself. The world functions on greed. Suddenly greed becomes the operative word. This, and that is indicative of our society. Our Asian societies don't function that way. You know, I for example, Alfred, I look at all the suffering in the world today. You know, for example, malaria. India just reported the other day that they underreported their malaria situation by vastly underreported, perhaps by several millions. There are millions of people suffering greatly from malaria, and mainly children. And there's dengue, and there's other mosquito vector diseases. Then, of course, there are other diseases. There's AIDS, and there's cancer, and so forth. And the grim irony of it all is that here these children are suffering terribly. Why? Because there's no morphine given to them to ease their pain. Why not? Because they don't have the money to buy this stuff. I think that's a terrible, terrible statement of our so-called civilization. Now, do we have the money? Of course we do. Look at the nuclear bombs that we built. Look at the nuclear ships that we built. Look at the massive military forces we have. And we're spending hundreds of millions of billions of dollars maintaining all that system. What the hell for? To kill people. And yet we have millions of people suffering terribly, and we ignore them. Where is our sense of social response, moral responsibility? Where are all these Christian values? Where are all the Christian churches, and what are they preaching? What are they going to preach tomorrow? Are they going to talk about that? Why the hell don't we get rid of all these nuclear arms? It won't do us a bit of good, because I wrote in my book, the translator told me a long time ago, there's no way that the Asian Council will ever allow a nuclear war on Earth. They may allow one drop, like India and Pakistan. It was they came very close to it some time ago, where India might have dropped an atomic bomb on Pakistan and vice versa. But then the agents would have stepped in and stopped it then, because if we want to destroy ourselves, that is up to us. But if we decide to do anything of that nature that will interfere with them, then that's a different situation. Now, when we explode atomic bombs on Earth, it affects the ley lines. You're aware of the ley lines, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes.
The ley lines permeate the universe. And when we do that and we distort these ley lines, we then create hazards for the space travel. That is the reason why they can't allow that to happen. And they will not allow a nuclear war to happen. And what are we doing? We're spending trillions and trillions of dollars building these damned nuclear bombs, and on top of that we have the hydrogen bombs, which is a mental sickness all of its own. So I feel very strongly about that, and I'm rather bitter about it, because I find that the ones who should be speaking about it, the Vatican and other religions, all our good spiritual people, this is what, and our governments, this is what they should be addressing. That they don't.
Are you saying that the transcenders are saying that there will be massive earth changes over, say, the next several years?
Over the next 2 to 3 years.
Uh-huh. Of the type that Edgar Cayce talked about?
Right on.
And there's no way of avoiding these?
No. Because, you see, it's not just human activity. Some of this occurs, it occurs because it's sort of a cycle type of thing. It's a cycle of energy systems in our solar system, the sun, the solar, our galaxy, and so forth. All of these things are taking place about every 25,000 years. They readjust themselves and they create some of these changes, Earth changes. So this is what we're apparently, to a large extent, we'll be facing.
Now, what role will the extraterrestrial forces in the Council of Eight and the Transcenders take during this period?
Apparently, there's not much they can do about that.
I see.
No.
Because there are all these rumors about how extraterrestrials would come in and evacuate people during Earth changes. Is there any substance to
that? Well, you see, when Atlantis... we're going through the same thing that Atlantis went through 11,500 years ago. And in fact, a lot of people, a lot of human beings on Earth today were on Atlantis. And why would we choose to go through this again? Baffles me. But so we did. But anyway, they had time to evacuate. And in spite of that, there are still several millions who decided, no, they would not leave. And they stayed and went down with the continent. But the aliens... did come in and they removed I don't know the numbers, removed a lot of Atlanteans to Egypt, Europe, down to southern United States where Mexico is, one thing another, and to South America. So yes, they did that, and are they going to help out in this case again? They may. I don't know.
Have the Transcenders given you any indication of once we're through that, how many humans may remain on the Earth?
No, they don't do that. People often wonder, well, how come? Is that all the info, all that's going on in the UFO cabal in Area 51, the president certainly should know about it. At least the chief of defense staff should know about it, but they don't. Why not? Because the information now is so restricted. It only goes up so far up the line, and where it stops, nobody knows. So that information is not provided to the public, so the public does not know. The politicians don't know. Who knows? Who has more information than anybody else? People like yourself and hundreds of ufologists all over the world. And so you've got to keep on doing what you're doing. Maybe more of it. Well, there's getting to be more of it as well. And I think that's important. And bring in the universities as much as you possibly can. And to have them deal with two major issues we've got to deal with now. We can't deal, there's not much we can do about Earth changes. So I think we can set that aside, Alfred. But two things we should consider now, very seriously, is that the Middle East and a general amnesty for Al-Qaeda, that's one thing we should be considering, and getting the hell out of the Middle East. Oh, one more point about that Middle East, if I have time, I'd just like to make a very quick comment. You know, one of the things is to say, well, there's a total imbalance in a military and political imbalance in the Middle East. It's all because Iran might build a uranium bomb, a nuclear bomb. I beg your pardon. They don't have one, and according to the Transcenders, they never will. Who has all of that vast nuclear arsenal? It's Israel. Well, and Israel today has nuclear submarines in the Persian Gulf, off the coast of Iran, armed with missiles that was helped and paid for by the Americans and by the French government, and the German Dolphin submarines given to them by the Germans. And there they are, anchored off the coast of Iran, with nuclear missiles pointed at Iran. Who is threatening whom? Do you hear anything about it? No, because we're given lies and lies and lies. And for years and years, while they were building up, Israel was building up this vast nuclear arsenal, they lied to the world and said no. And the United States, oh no, they had nothing to do with it. France denied having anything to do with it. So did Germany. And yet, who is the threat in the Middle East? Now, there is an agreement signed, a military agreement signed between the United States and Israel. It's been there for many years. Is that in case Israel is ever attacked, that the United States would come to its defense. Fine. the United States has nuclear armed submarines in the Mediterranean, in the Arabian Sea, and the Persian Gulf. They surround the Middle East with their nuclear missiles and their, this sort of thing. So why does Israel require all these nuclear arms? Why can't Russia and the United States say to Israel, you get rid of all those nuclear missiles, that'll bring a balance, political and military balance to the Middle East, and we will guarantee your security. Why not? So these are things that I wish, you know, somebody would talk about, discuss. And the other thing is that in regards to the trade dollar and the devaluation of 10% to 10%, those are issues that's got to be discussed. I can't do this. I'll go ahead.
Right. Those are very important issues, and the information that you're bringing us, Dan, through your book, Challenges of Change, is paramount. The immediate information with a confirmed prediction on October 13, 2010, that of the decision of the Council of the Regional Council, the Council of Eight, of its UFO sighting over New York, setting out its intent to intervene to clean up the environment of this planet, thus giving us a future, and also alerting us to the dangers that we'll have in this transitory period, and to a hopeful outcome once we get through the transition, where representatives of the council will be addressing the United Nations, and there'll be a complete transformation of government. I mean, that's extraordinary, and I'm sure that those concerns that you have will be dealt with, you know, in the course of all of these incredible changes that you are describing.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah,
I hope so. Now, one thing I'd like to mention before we stop here is that I appeared on Coast to Coast AM.
Okay.
The following day, we had over 600 orders for the book, and the next day, well, I forget how many. We were swamped, and we only had 1,000 books printed that I copied. So next week, we're going for the next print, the fourth print, fourth edition. And but we're way behind. So when people call in or order a book from, they can order a book like to our website through, our website.
Is that I'm looking at a website here, Challenges of Change. It's on a Google, a site.
Yeah, but it's. Oh, God, heavens, I forgot this, word.google.com, /...
Yeah, it's sites.google.com,
/,
and then Challenges of Change.
Challenges of Change.
Yeah.
But I want to warn any of your viewers who are interested in ordering a book, just please have patience. You can order now.
Yeah.
But we're just swamped, and we're hiring more people and hoping to get those books out within the next 2-3 weeks.
Excellent.
So, and thank you, Alfred, for
the
wonderful work
you're
doing.
Yes, Dan. You know, and we're going to be monitoring this, Dan, and I hope that you will consent to join us in future programs as developments occur, and we'll be monitoring you and your work and your website closely in the future.
Good. All right. Thank you very much.
And thank you very, very much. And this will be posted as a radio program, but also it'll be an article in the Examiner also.
Good
okay. Enough.
Good.
Well, we've been with Stanley A. Fullam, a former NORAD officer, author of I can truly say this is an extraordinary book, Challenges of Change. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you.